This is no superficial look at the numbers. It's pretty exhaustive. What went into creating this WEEC study on the cost of implementing the group's plans?
Well, WEEC created a 14-member committee, and they held six meetings starting in mid-October. The committee was also broken into three working groups that would examine specific issues, and these groups held a total of 10 additional meetings. And when they weren't meeting, the members of the committee were researching on their own, whether it was reviewing documents, communicating with others who have expertise at all levels of school finance. And the committee included representatives from both the Christina and Red Clay districts, which would be involved in this proposed reorganization. And the members also consulted with leaders in those districts as they conducted their research. And then the report, when it's finally complete, there's still some more tweaks to be done, and will be sent to the General Assembly in late March or early April, should be about 100 pages long. So it's a pretty extensive piece of work.
Let's start with the base numbers. What would this move mean, bottom line, to both Christina and Red Clay?
Okay, let's nail down some of the basic facts here first. There are six schools and eight buildings overall in Wilmington that would move from the Christina School District into Red Clay. For tax purposes, the portion of Wilmington that would move from Christina to Red Clay has an assessed property value in excess of $1 billion. That's billion with a B. There are 4,357 public school students who lived in the area who would be affected by the shift. The number that would actually move is somewhat of a variable. About 2,500 of those students now attend Christina schools, and the other 1,800 or so attend either charter schools or they've choiced into schools in other districts. As for the financials, there are two numbers that are pretty clear. Federal funds move with the student, and a little bit more than $1.8 million that's now going into Christina from the federal government would move over into Red Clay. State funds are allocated via a unit system, but the result is pretty much the same. Christina would lose about $19.9 million in state funding, and Red Clay would gain a little bit more than $19.9 million from the state.
But as the cliche goes, the devil is in the details, and that appears to be the case here as well, starting with the impact on Red Clay. What are some of the things officials and residents in Red Clay might balk at? Where might they face some additional costs?
Well, you might remember that last year, before any cost studies were done, there was a concern in Red Clay, and we're talking about school officials, parents, taxpayers in general, as well as the legislators who represent the area, that the district could be left holding the bag if the state didn't pick up the costs for the tab for costs that would be incurred beyond what the additional tax revenue generated from what had been the Christina portion of Wilmington would generate. And sure enough, the committee found that additional costs to Red Clay could top $10.6 million. While Christina, even after losing tax revenues from its portion of Wilmington, would register a net savings of nearly $2.4 million. Now, these are just working numbers for now. Exact figures won't be known until after the plan is approved, if it's approved, and we get hard figures on how many students are actually involved in moving from one district to the other. Ultimately, the committee figures that the added costs to Red Clay would be less than that $10.6 million, which is kind of regarded as a cap, and the net savings to Christina would probably be more than the $2.4 million that was calculated. Now, in making this calculation, these extra costs to Red Clay come, for the most part, from Red Clay providing current Christina students with the same programming and services that it now provides to students who attend Red Clay schools that are located in the city of Wilmington. You might recall that 2 years ago, those schools, because they had subpar results on state tests, were designated as priority schools, and under a mandate from the state, Red Clay beefed up staffing in those buildings, adding reading and math specialists and lowering class sizes. And now there's even another layer of costs here, costs that even this committee of experts couldn't put a figure on yet, so they're labeled officially as to be determined. Those costs would be incurred when Red Clay rewires Christina buildings so they're compatible with the computer systems that students students and staff use in other Red Clay schools. And when Red Clay orders new tech gear and books and instructional materials for its new students, and when it modifies the entrance areas to the Christina building so that they have the same security features that Red Clay schools now have. So you've got some figures that are known and some figures that, you know, right now still remain to be determined.
And the idea was that the state would cover many of these additional costs that Red Clay would face. But in this budget climate, that still seems somewhat unlikely, correct?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Everyone has been thinking all along that the state should pick up the tab. I mean, Christina certainly wouldn't want to pay for educating students who are no longer residents of its district. And the Red Clay community, especially its suburban portion, made clear last year that they consider it unfair that anyone would think that they should bear the sole burden of paying for the education of these children that are suddenly thrust into their district. That being said, the state's facing a $350 million budget gap already, and the costs that we've spoken about thus far today don't even cover the $7.5 million or more that WEIC wants the state to spend to provide supplemental funding for students in Wilmington and also downstate who are categorized as low-income students or English language learners or who are in kindergarten through third grade and have special education needs.
And we talked about Christina getting perhaps some savings out of this, at least in the baseline numbers. But is there anywhere that Christina could take a hit in this process?
Yes, and this is another one of those imponderable to be determined. What happens with Christina if some of its staff members who now work in Wilmington schools are not hired for similar jobs in Red Clay? The commission, WEIC, in its overall plan suggests that current employees retain their jobs, but in a realignment like this, there's no way of knowing for sure how many positions will be open, whether any new programs that Red Clay starts up would require credentials that some of the Christina teachers don't have right now. Now, of course, some of these Christina employees, if there's not a job for them in Red Clay, might wind up being able to fill vacancies that would naturally occur in Christina, from teachers taking leave, retirements, moving, all that sort of stuff. But what it does come down to ultimately is that Christina could take a hit in picking up some of these salary costs. We really don't know. But you know, as you mentioned, there will be a net increase in revenue for Christina. It's estimated in the neighborhood of $2.4 million. They certainly could use some of that money to pick up the tab for surplus staffing if they're required to keep a few more people on board for a year or so.
And your piece notes that there are some other issues that could prove a bit more complicated than anticipated. Tell us about those.
Okay, yeah, you know, the devil is in the details, that's for sure. I mean, the great thing about playing God is that you're looking at this thing from the 40,000-foot level and you see how everything ought to work out, but then when you get down to all the detail work, that's when the devil gets involved. And sure enough, you know, there are questions here about who is responsible for paying off the bonds that were issued to pay for structural improvements to the Christina schools in Wilmington. Does the debt obligation stay with Christina, whose voters approved the bond issues, or does the debt move over to Red Clay, which would be operating the buildings? You know, and then if the responsibility for paying the debt service moves over to Red Clay, would the former Christina residents who become part of Red Clay be taxed at a different rate for debt service? Lawyers have given the committee different opinions. There's no recent precedent for anything like this in the state. And, you know, the state laws describe situations that could occur when multiple districts are consolidated, but they don't address what to do when part of one school district is moved into another school district. So, yeah, lots of room for confusion, lots of opportunities here for lawyers to develop conflicting opinions, which can be debated.
But I guess at a baseline, there is that kind of thought that both these districts recently passed referendums. Would voters now be paying for things that they didn't necessarily vote for when they passed those most recent referendums?
Well, yeah, there's always that possibility. And yet, on the other hand, you've got a situation here where if you're in Christina, where the district recently did approve a tax hike, and you're in that Christina portion that would move over to Red Clay, you would actually wind up be paying less in taxes in Red Clay than if you were in Christina. Now there is I think it's in state law, or if it's not, you know, there's some legal precedent for saying that, you know, you don't have to pay if you're moved from one district to another. You don't have to pay the a tax rate that you didn't vote for or didn't have the opportunity to vote for. But on the other hand, you know, certainly Christina residents aren't likely to say I'm opposed to paying less money in my property taxes. So yeah, lots of opportunity here for confusion.
And that confusion, though, I imagine, does not make it any easier to rally support to this plan, especially when you pair it with the budget situation. It seems like as you dig deeper, it becomes a lot harder, perhaps, to present a plan that is just easy to sell.
Well, yeah, you're absolutely right about that. I mean, taken separately, I mean, each of these issues that we've talked about is really a rather small part of the big picture. And, you know, remember, too, we're talking about just the financial implications of a possible reorganization that would affect a piece of one school district moving to another. We're not talking here yet about student assignments, staff assignments, and, you know, any of the myriad other things that aren't addressed directly financially. And in any case, each of these issues that we've talked about is a relatively small part of the picture. We're a year or two away from anything possibly being resolved, and that's why there's this great fear of the unknown. There are a lot of what-ifs here. I mean, you know, certainly I would think that lawyers and budget experts and educators can get together and come up with equitable solutions if they've got the time to sit back and work on these matters. But the sheer number of these little details can seem quite daunting before you get started. And then when you throw on top of that the budget issues that we've been talking about at the state level, and you can see why some lawmakers might not be willing to move forward before the General Assembly session ends on June 30th.
Which brings up the larger question. Is there a danger that this plan is now more likely to become one of those efforts that winds up collecting dust on a shelf, waiting to be referred to at some point in the future when the next group comes around to take a stab at these issues?
Well, yes, certainly that's a danger. I mean, just as our recent governors and the General Assembly have been kicking the budget can down the road for years, still without finding lasting solutions, the same thing could happen with the WEIC plan. I mean, as we've seen, the budget problems haven't gone away. They've just gotten greater. And the same is the case with the key problems that have damaged the quality of education in Wilmington. They've become magnified, and they've gone statewide. Low-income students are just about everywhere, and there are large concentrations of English language learners downstate as well as in Wilmington. These issues are not going away. Instead, they're becoming more serious. And if they're not addressed in a significant manner, there could well be long-term consequences, not only for all our children, but also for the state's economic growth.